Recently, Angel Studios, famous for bringing us the beloved TV series The Chosen, have just brought out a feature film on the life of Saint Francis Xavier Cabrini, the first American to be canonized. The biopic came out in cinemas last week and is called Cabrini. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to the screenwriter, Rod Barr. Rod, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. It's really nice to be here.
It's lovely to have this opportunity. I watched The Sound of Freedom, which I understand you wrote as well, and I just was completely blown away by that film.
Oh, thank
And
you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Very different film from Cabrini, but it certainly has done its work in the world.
yeah, and I was really excited about this film, Cabrini, when I heard that you'd written it, because I could see that you were just a fabulous script writer and really had a feeling for the medium of cinema. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your journey coming to film. Have you always been interested in writing film?
I've always been interested in writing. Writing film was something I came to a little bit later in my life, but all of these forms of expression of writing fiction, I worked in video games for a while. That was not as satisfying to me, but it was a form of expression. But movies have a very particular sort of power that I was drawn to, and they're collaborative, which I'm very much drawn to because it takes so many people to make one of these things, and so many people working at the top of their game to make one of these things that's good. To make it a good movie is really something very, very special.
Yeah, that's true. And tell us a little bit about Cabrini.
Well, this was a project that came to me through the executive producer, Eustace Wolfington, and he has a had and has a very special devotion and interest to Mother Cabrini, and he felt inspired and drawn to make a movie and approached me to write it. And I have to say, I'd never heard of Cabrini, so my first response was, I don't think I want to write a movie about a nun right now. And then I read about Cabrini and I realized, okay, wow, she is a powerhouse of faith, of course, and a powerhouse of acumen, determination, business skill, everything. I mean, she just lived an outsized, big, faith-filled life that I thought, and Eustace thought, and Alejandra thought, we all thought, had the opportunity to touch a lot of people, of all faiths, of no faiths, of any Christian denomination. She's Catholic, she's profoundly Catholic, but the story has a universal transcendent power that we felt really had the power, had the opportunity to bring her and her faith to a large world audience. That's our hope. That was our goal.
So when you say that initially you were not interested in making a movie about a nun, but there was something about this character in particular that won you over to her story. And is it perhaps the fact that she does reach beyond the boundaries of what a story of a nun might have been confined to?
I think so. I think what was fascinating was when, well, first of all, by the way, she's an ultimate underdog. And an underdog story in movies in Hollywood, that story is going to work. If you do it right, it's a Rocky story. It's a story that about someone that nobody believes in, who has all kinds of deficits, who knows that she has all kinds of deficits, but who has this determination to overcome all of the obstacles that people put in her way. That kind of underdog story kind of always works if you do it right. I'm speaking now in terms of Hollywood sort of templates, and she has that story. And then when you marry that underdog quality with a completely unexpected trajectory for a nun, which is she founded what is considered to be one of the greatest empires, business empires in the world. Of course, it wasn't business in the sense of profit, but she was the equal to Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, all of these great businessmen of that time who we revere. Cabrini was their equal. in business acumen, in organizational skills, in executive skills, in her ability to train women to lead these institutions. She trained CEOs and she put them in charge of large institutions. And she went and she founded another one. And then she founded another one. And then she put women in charge of those. And so she was a transformational figure who was an incredible businesswoman. And I don't think people expect that from a diminutive little nun like she was, a sickly diminutive nun. She was a powerhouse. And those things make for great storytelling. And but not just great storytelling, storytelling with meaning, with a sort of, and audiences are leaving this movie, I would say transformed and inspired and sort of amazed that the movie they expected and the person they expected was something quite different. And they're just delighted. So we're very pleased with the audience, you know, response so far.
The adversity that she faces is not just external. You've alluded to it, that, you know, she was a sickly person. And I think just the challenge that she faces in her own body, you know, being somebody who suffered the trauma of almost drowning as a child and then contracting tuberculosis, and being given only a few years to live, and then defying both the doctor's orders to stay in bed, and also literally defying death. I mean, that in itself could have been story material, and yet there is this external adversity as well. And I'd like to hear how the two sort of play against each other.
Oh yeah, well, that's a great question. I love it. Movies are tricky, and they're complicated little watch mechanisms that you have to put together, because unlike fiction, you don't have that direct access to somebody's inner life. There's no narrator telling you, and then I felt this, and then I felt this. The actor has to do that. The director has to do that. The writer has to put words and situations together that represent an inner life. And these all have to be, also have an exterior dimension to it, something you can film, something that shows up on a movie screen. So those are all challenges. And so in movies, the internal and the external are very transparent to each other. Mm-hmm. And so the drowning episode, which is something we go back to, obviously it happened. Yes, it happened in life, and it happened in Codogno, in a little river outside her town. And she fell in while she was putting boats, little paper boats, in the river, pretending to be a missionary. And all those things are biographically true, but what we did in the movie is to make those psychologically true, because this thing, these memories of her being underwater, keep coming back at moments of psychological turmoil for her. So they represent kind of an inner state. But in movies, it's great if you can find an image that on the screen that represents an internal state. And so that's the challenge of movie making. And then when something as obvious as external obstacles, like the poverty of the Italians in Five Points, the Archbishop of New York, Corrigan, who really doesn't want her there at first.
He was well cast, I must say. He's
wonderful. David Morse is incredible. Yeah. And he comes around in the end, the Archbishop, and he did in real life. But not at first, and that's all true. I mean, we're not exaggerating any of that stuff. Those are exactly the obstacles that she faced. It's a combination of the internal and the external, and what that adds up to, I think, is what we're hearing from the audience is that there's just a power to the story that really touches them really, really deeply, and that they want to share with others.
Yeah, another thing that struck me about it is just how beautiful it is. You know, the images are, it's almost like every single panel in there is a painting. And what was that like for you as a writer to see your script come to life in that way?
I love that question, because as a writer, all you can control is what's on the written page. Then you have to hand it over to other humans who do their job well or poorly. And in this case, they did it extraordinarily well. And Alejandro Monteverde, the director, and Gorka, the cinematographer, just crushed it. They nailed it. They made it. They elevated everything that was on the page into sort of this operatic, beautiful images. It's funny, someone mentioned a couple of days ago that we used to call these things moving pictures, you know, movies. Yeah. We're going to go to the moving pictures. And then someone said, well, this isn't a moving picture. It's like a moving painting.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a great way to describe it. You could almost push pause anywhere in the movie, print it, hang it on your wall, and it would be a beautiful image. But I will say that the beauty is in the service of the story, meaning it's not just for the heck of it. It's mm-hmm. literally attempting to elevate everything, make it sort of make it operatic, make because mm-hmm. her life, by operatic, I mean sort of elevated and big, because Cabrini's life had that quality to it. It had sort of an elevated bigness to it.
Yeah.
And the movie had to support that. The movie had to raise itself up to that level in order for the story to come through. So it was just, you know, beautifully shot and supporting the story in the best way.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful, but it's not airbrushed. You know, there's these ideas that are coming through. There's very stark themes, like the poverty that you've mentioned, the sickness, the adversity, the tragedy of people losing their parents. And you're right. I think the beauty does, it doesn't gloss over things or airbrush them, which is incredibly powerful. I really loved Christiana Del Anna's portrayal of Cabrini, and she has something of a humor that she brings out. I mean, there's these little moments of a smoldering smile where you wouldn't necessarily expect it, and I wonder if that's something she put in or it's something that was underlying the script as well.
I would say both,
mm-hmm.
but mostly her.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's very modest.
Yeah. Well, no, but I think it's actually true. I mean, she did an incredible job. She brought this woman to life in a yeah. way that I think is quite remarkable. And you're right. She has these little moments of humor. She, you know, there are some lines that are very difficult to deliver in this movie. Like, the world is too small for what I intend to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a big line for somebody to deliver. And she actually delivers it to the Pope in one of the early scenes. And I remember Alejandro and I were like, this is going to be a challenging line to come across. She nailed it. There is that little bit of humor that she brings out in it. She knows that what she's saying is an astonishing statement, but she also believes it. Mm-hmm. And that is a quote from Mother Cabrini. It's one of the essential quotes from Mother Cabrini. And she believed that. She believed that of herself. That was the power of her mission. And Christiana somehow captured the intricacy and the many layered quality that Cabrini had to have in order to say such a thing and believe it.
Yeah. One thing I really loved sort of running through the film was this theme of belonging, being told that she doesn't belong in several places, going to a new place where the Pope has told her to go, and then being told that she needs to go back. And then there's a point where she actually says, you know, this is where I'll be buried. And it's like an acceptance of where she belongs. Tell us about the relevance of that theme and why you decided to emphasize it the way you did.
Well, thank you for noting that. And also thank you for noticing how it's woven through not just her personal story, but the immigrant story.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that scene where she meets the guys coming out of the streetcar who tell her to go back to Italy, calling yeah. her Dago and guinea pig. And we ought to send them all back. Mm. That is a very demeaning way of saying, you don't belong here. You mm. don't belong. Go away. And she got that from men in the Vatican who thought, you know what? No woman in the history of the church has ever led their own overseas mission. None, mm-hmm. zero. Men lead those things. go back to where you belong. You don't belong even asking for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was never done. I mean, this is just a historical truth. She was the first woman in history to do it, in church history to do it. So she never let that stop her. And that's part and parcel of what I was talking about regarding the underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
If you're told you don't belong here, you know, Rocky is like, you're going to fight Apollo Creed. You're going to get your hat handed to you, kid. You can't do it. You don't belong in that ring. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I'll train. Oh yeah, I'll show you. She had that quality to her. It was driven by faith, but that's a fun also movie quality in a character, is that quality of, oh, you don't think I can do it? Watch me do it.
Yeah.
She had that little chip on her shoulder kind of quality. Now, of course, it was driven by this intense faith.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a very human quality that we can all relate to. And it's not a quality that we normally relate to a saintly figure, but it absolutely is in her case.
Yeah, no, I think courage is definitely an important aspect of saintliness.
Yeah.
Sadly, we've only got a minute or two left. And I was wanting to know if maybe you could say a little bit about the work that Angel Studios are doing and what excites you about working with them.
Well, look, they've been amazing. Sound of Freedom was sitting on a shelf for 2 years, gathering dust. Nobody wanted to put it out. And the pandemic came, that complicated things as well, because there were no theaters anymore that people were going to. So they took a chance with that. They believed in it. They saw it. They helped turn it into what it became. Cabrini has a similar quality to it. It's not the kind of movie that Hollywood studios are looking for that they think. It's like, yeah, what we're looking for is a nun movie. Anybody got any nun movies out there? That's not how Hollywood works and thinks. And of course, it's more than a nun movie, and I'm making light of that sort of easy way of categorizing or labeling it. But that's what Hollywood does. They look at it in the most basic terms. And what Angel is doing is they're seeing the universal sort of story that has the opportunity or the power to touch everyone.
Yeah.
And let's find a way to bring it to a large audience, because people need these nutrients, these stories. They may not know they need them, but we live in such divided times. Times, I think, with a deficit of hope, that when something comes along that offers a sense of inspiration and hope, and that is not cynical, this is not a cynical movie.
That's right.
And it's hard to make a movie that's not cynical and also good. It's hard to do that because we expect anti-heroes. We expect dark themes. We expect irony and quotation marks around everything and cynicism. Mm-hmm. That's mostly what we consume in the media. And when something comes along that isn't like that, it's very refreshing. And it sort of takes you aback at first. It's like, oh, is this really going to be, wow, okay, they're going to go, they're going to do it. They're going to just stick to this. And that's Angel's mission. And in terms of distribution, and that's something that we're very proud to be partnering with them on this, on Cabrini.
Well, Rod, it's been so great talking to you. This has been a really interesting interview, and just hearing more about the inner workings of the script behind this wonderful film, Cabrini. I'd like to just encourage all our listeners to go and watch it. And we will definitely, I myself personally, will be looking out for where your name pops up in the credits in the future. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Tim. And just to add to what you said, to speak to your audience, please go see it. And if you see it and you love it, which everyone seems to, tell other people about it. This is a word of mouth thing. This is not Universal Studios or Warner Brothers. We're the little guy. So if you love it, please tell other people to go see it. And I can promise that they're going to be glad they did. So thank you, Tim, for helping us get the word out.